Hi, I'm Neil Giraldo, and welcome to the Rock Solid Podcast.
Make me a deal and make it good for me. I won't get full of myself. I can't afford to be. This is small town music. This is big town music. He's ahead of his time, you know, but he can't use it. If only he could prove it. Well, tomorrow's just a song away. A song away. A song away.
Hey everybody, welcome to Rock Solid, the comedy podcast for all things music, both new and classic. I'm Pat Francis, and joining me in the Zoom room to discuss his career in music and three-chord bourbon, please welcome Rock and Roll Hall of Fame inductee, guitarist, and bourbon aficionado, Mr. Neil Giraldo. How's it going today, Neil?
I'm doing well, thank you. How you doing?
I am good. I am good. November 5th, 2022, Microsoft Theater, Los Angeles, California. You were inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame by Sheryl Crow, and I was there. Exciting night. Great to see Myron join you guys live. And my first question before we get to three-chord bourbon, was it ever going to be a deal breaker with the Hall if they only wanted Pat to be inducted?
No, first of all, what you have to think about the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, first of all, you know, you create a body of work, right? And it changes nothing. Your body of work, you know, stands the way it is. It's always going to be there. That's why we never looked at it as being anything than a Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Like, if you follow what I'm saying, in other words, you don't do work. You don't become a musician to get awards. You just
right.
don't. You know, I never had that philosophy. My father taught me, you know, just you work hard. You put in its time. Whatever comes from that comes from it. You don't think about anything else. So, you know, it wasn't. Patricia and I were a partnership from day one. You're going to hear more about that later when I finish my book, which should have been done about 10 years ago. But, you know, what we did is in the very beginning, we created a partnership, an equal partnership, and we really weren't allowed to talk about it.
Right.
Because that was what the record company wanted. And that was okay. And I was happy doing what I do. I love writing songs, producing records, playing guitars, piano, whatever. So,
all right. Yes, I was going to add, my next question was Pat's book, Between a Heart and a Rock Place. I was wondering if that's the full story or if you had your story that was going to come out too, and you just answered that. So,
yes.
Good to know.
My story is, it's the truth, just like hers was the truth, but this truth is coming from another side.
Sure.
And, you know, respect. I don't plan to put anybody on a cross. I don't plan to hurt anybody on this, but I will tell the truth. Let's just say that. So.
Of course, that's all I ever want when I read a rock autobiography. All right.
Yeah. Important thing to remember though. This is important. The reason I didn't do it sooner was a couple reasons. Number one, I didn't finish it. Number two is I never thought it was important as far as from me. In other words, I don't consider myself a rock star or any of that. I'm a musician. I'm a very grateful musician. And all I ever wanted to be was a musician. I don't need to have my name anywhere. I don't need to be that, right? So the problem with writing the memoir is I don't want that focus on me. I'd rather have it focused on the story and what it really means. And I want to really give hope to a lot of people. You'll realize my life growing up was very, very difficult. And I just want to give people hope, basically.
All right. Well, I can't think of anything better than giving people hope.
Yep.
Neil, I do want to say this. I feel that you are highly underrated as a guitarist. I've seen you in concert many times. I've heard the work, you know, with other artists also, not just Pat and what you guys have created. And you just have such a cool thing that other people don't have. And I just want people to know, if you've never seen Neil perform live, you got to go. What are you waiting for? And you're going to see what I'm talking about. Just so cool. Yeah. Fantastic. And for me, underrated, Neil. So I just want to give you some props.
Well, thank you. Here's how I look at this. When I'm in the studio, or I'm in my various studios, one, I have a production suite, a writing suite, then I have a full-on studio. Whenever I'm in the studio, I'm a grown-up, and I have a very important job to do, you know. But the stage, that's where I become a teenager again. I could just play. You know, I play piano, I play guitar, I love it. I could just play and not have to worry, because, you know, you make a mistake, it doesn't matter. But when you're recording and you're right, you know, you can't make mistakes. So yeah. I just feel like a teenager, and I really love that. I love that.
Well, it's you can definitely feel it when you watch you and Pat on stage together. Everyone's having fun. It's just so damn good. Okay. Three Chord Bourbon. How long has this company been around?
It was born on May 12th, 2016. And the idea came from, I write songs, obviously, you know that. I was working on a couple, I've been doing that forever. I write screenplays, I have a production company, I have all kinds of different production outlets and creative outlets. So I was working on a hybrid documentary to give the real hardworking musicians in Northern Ohio, where I grew up, Eastern and Western, and all of Ohio, basically, all the hardworking musicians that I grew up listening to, who inspired me, was fun to play with, to interview them and have a great time. But inside this documentary, it's a hybrid. There's actually a story on either end of it, which is really interesting, where there's real actors and such. And then it goes to interviews and things like that. So I was working on this project, and a friend of mine saw me post something. And he says, well, if you ever need any help with this, let me know. And then a whole year went by. Finally, he got back to me again. I says, yeah, I think I'm about ready for it. It says, why don't we get a spirits company, and then we can get some angel investing, you know, maybe we get a couple $100,000, because it was an independent film project. And I said, why don't we start our own company? And then he laughed. But anybody that knows me knows that I when I have an idea, something like that, it just goes. I don't waste any time. So he laughed, and the Three Chord Bourbon was born on that day of May 12, 2016. And then, like in a band and musicians, you try to find the best players, you know. I wanted to find the best people in the spirit industry that had the same fundamental basis for doing a company like this. And that is helping musicians. I mean, this is to the core. And I got to say this, because I say it anytime I talk about this. My father was a hardworking Sicilian, tough guy, sweetest guy on the planet, and the most kind and thoughtful person. I retired him in 1981, and every day I talked to him, he thanked me every single day. And he installed in me, and I've tried to follow in his footsteps to help other people, you know. And I truly believe that being a musician, this is part of your job. You're making records, writing songs to help people everywhere. Why don't you help the players too? So that was really the fundamental backbone of what the company was about. And I got the greatest team. These guys are off and gals are fantastic, and they follow the motto. I couldn't be more happy. This is like ridiculous. I don't know how it happened to me, but it did. So I'm happy about it.
Here's what I like about this brand. And the gentleman who set up this interview, I hope I say his last name correctly, Michael Nanula.
That's it.
He sent me a couple of bottles in front of me. I got Hailstorm Backstage Series. And I've got the blended bourbon whiskey. And then I ventured out to the Malibu Liquor and Cigar Company, and I picked up a bottle of the single barrel bourbon, and it's fantastic.
What did you get? Show me again. Is it Whiskey Drummer?
I'm looking at single barrel bourbon. It's the Malibu Liquor and Cigar company. The guy told me that he purchased the whole barrel.
Okay. Yeah, that he did his own play with that. Yeah, that's correct. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, wow. Fantastic. Yeah. That's a good one.
And here's what I like about three-chord bourbon and you. I feel like you are not just the face of the company. I feel like this is a lifestyle for you. It makes me angry when a couple of, I'm just going to name them. I don't care. A couple of guys like Paul Stanley and Gene Simmons tell us that they've never let alcohol pass their lips. And now they got gin and rum and they say it's the best. And I'm not buying it because how would they know? But with you, this feels like a lifestyle and I'm all in on the three-chord bourbon. I've tried the Bob Dylan. I've tried all these celebrity spirits and I'm not lying when I say this is one of the best that I've had.
Correct. Well, thank you for that. We appreciate that. That our master whiskey maker, Ari Zussman, is a phenomenal, phenomenal whiskey maker and a superior human being. Just like everybody in the company. That's very important. In music, I always had this model of being, no matter who I work with, whether it be the record company, whether it was musicians, you had to like one another. I mean, I couldn't be in a band with somebody I didn't like or work with a record company that I didn't like. That just is real weird to me. And everybody in this company is spectacular. It really goes to them. They work, they're worth their butt off. The other thing I'm going to say is that we have a slogan that's respect the moment. So not that there's anything wrong with having a couple of drinks and jumping on tables, if that's what you go on to do, but that is not what I'm talking about.
Right.
I'm talking about respecting the moment. Sip the whiskey. Enjoy it. Don't abuse it. Don't abuse it. Eat food with it if you like. It's phenomenal with food. And start conversation. Now, people use their phones to have conversation texting. That's okay, too. It doesn't have to be in person. But just slow it down. Respect the moment. And that's the key to the spirit itself. As far as everybody in the car, I can say everybody because we all follow the same pattern.
Now, is it okay to make mixed drinks with this? Or would you rather we just drink it on ice or just sip it in a glass? What are we destroying the integrity of the bourbon if we mix it with things?
No, you wouldn't be destroying it. But see, we have a lot of expressions, right?
Sure.
We call each different thing, we have an expression. Our very first entry level one was a blended. And Ari, who's the master whiskey maker for us, he would say, you know what's great? If you're cutting the lawn and you want to take a break and it's like 1 o'clock in the afternoon, if you mix that with a little soda, it's a great little like a highball, little mixed drink. So there's certain expressions that it's okay if you like that. We have a great Manhattan. We have a great, we use Strange Collaboration for? Oh, Michael knows what it is. I do too, but I'm drawing a blank.
It's okay. It's okay.
No, it's okay. It's okay if you enjoy it as a mixed drink too. I personally, if anything, you might want to add just like a drop or two of water. For me, I like the flavor of it just being neat, you know. Again, you watch all these TV shows. They have all these episodic adventures of all these things. You always see a glass of bourbon. And you know what really is kind of cool that I see is they usually don't have mixed drinks, but it's just neat.
No, they don't. It's always neat.
That's kind of nice, yeah.
Well, that's what was amazing to me when I did, because I'm not a connoisseur and I don't always drink it neat, but this single barrel bourbon that I got, it was my friend and I tried it just neat and we were blown away. We were like, oh, this is what the good stuff tastes like. So,
yeah, it is a great, again, though, here's the thing though. If you like it neat and we call it a hug. If it's a little too strong, we never use the words strong or sweet or any of that. We use hug.
Okay.
It's in most of them, we have a gentle hug, but the little higher proof is a little more, it's a bigger hug, right? So if you want to just open it up a little bit, you could try a couple drops of water and it will open it up a little bit, make it a little bit more open.
Gotcha. Just let me get it out there now before I forget. threechordbourbon.com on Twitter. It's @3. That's the number, chord bourbon. And on Instagram @3chordbourbon, spelled out T-H-R-E-E. Neil,
and very important. Wait, very important. Chord is spelled with an H. I know some people.
Yes, chord. It's like guitar chord. Yes, that is very important. Three chord.
And one more thing. One thing sometimes people get it wrong. Three chords bourbon. It's not three chords bourbon. That sounds real bad. Three chord bourbon is lyrical.
Three chord bourbon. The bottles are gorgeous. Also, yeah. When the bottle's empty, you're probably going to want to keep it. Put it on your shelf.
Yeah, that's another part of it. Yeah, we wanted it to be, you know, if you notice the bottle, we have it's a pick, but we never really thought it to be a pick with our Roman numeral, three chord bourbon, but it's got this Illuminati thing. It's supposed to like draw you in like, ooh, what is that? little mystery, just like a song. You know, when you create a ghost in a song and a hit record, you don't know what it is sometimes about why you love it so much, but there's a little mystery. And that's real powerful.
And Neil, there's many SKUs on the website. There's not just two or three different things. You guys have a lot of stuff going on over there.
Correct. Expressions, we call them. We got quite a few. I mean, and we do a lot of, charity work with it, like the Strange Collaboration. It's just not musicians. It's with a dear friend of mine, a young man who I got very close to. He was dating my youngest daughter, and he looked to me sort of like a surrogate father.
Yeah.
And he passed away. He was a wingsuit flyer. His name is Johnny Strange. So Strange Collaboration is one that gives back to the Johnny Strange Foundation, partial proceeds from that particular one. So we do other things with, you know, all kinds of music, people, artists. Doesn't have to just be music, you know, try to help people.
What I'm getting from you, Neil, just talking so far, I feel like for you, it's family, then music, and then bourbon. Family first.
Let's call music and families together because, man, you know, I got to tell you, because, you know, as you'll read, if you read my book, you'll realize that without music, I would not be here. I had terrible neurosis and terrible sickness when I was a kid for the longest time. And the only thing that rescued and helped me was music. When I had a guitar in my hand, all of a sudden I felt great. My Uncle Sam used to come all the time. I was Sicilian. He said, Nilo, you know, play a little guitar all the time. And one little funny thing, though, he once told me, he was my favorite uncle. He was really cool. He says, Nilo, I tried every way possible to make a living without working. Don't be a musician. That's not true, because you really got to work. So yeah, family and music go together, because really it's a savior. You know, like the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame speech that I made, I made it a point to talk about bullying and people that can't come out of their basements or their garage or their house or bedrooms. You know, those people are suffering and hurting everywhere. And music has a way to help them and nourish them and give them an opportunity what normally would exist. It's important.
I agree. Music is the medicine.
You bet.
So let's throw out some accolades. So many platinum albums. But on August 1st, 1981, the second video to debut on a new network called MTV is You Better Run. Pat is the first female artist on MTV. You're the first lead guitarist ever on the network. After that first week of MTV, was there an uptick in sales for the Pat Benatar catalog, the couple of albums that were out at that point?
Oh, yeah. The anonymity was gone. I mean, all of a sudden you were recognized almost everywhere. It's because they played it around the clock, which I know the people behind MTV now, you know, and they're good friends. And I always talk about it. I wasn't a big fan of doing videos. I spent all this time in the studio creating this music where you can visualize your, have your own, like when you read a book, you can visualize your characters, right?
Yeah.
And a video put it in a different place. And all of a sudden, when you hear the song, you think of the video. And that always kind of bugged me. But think about this for a minute. What MTV did is dramatically change what software companies did, because they gave it to you for free.
Yeah.
Until you were hooked on it. Then they said, oh, by the way, it's going to cost them. And, you know, by having commercials where they get their kickback. So they gave it to you for free, just like a software company. Try the product. You're going to love it. Once you love it, it comes $2.99 to subscribe, you know. So on the business side of it, I thought it was brilliant. That I didn't even know if they really thought about that as deep as it feels now. But it's pretty cool, right?
It is pretty cool. 1979, the first album, In the Heat of the Night. And one of my favorite songs, We Live for Love, written by Neil Giraldo.
We needed one more song, and I had some ideas kicking around. I said, you know, I got this idea, you know, We Live for Love, you know, let's kick it around, see if we can make something happen. And it kind of worked out. It was the second single. We tried releasing other singles from the record, and none of them did anything. And they were thinking about, you know, dropping the record and not working it anymore. A radio station up in Seattle played Heartbreaker, and that was right around disco. And they said there was too much guitar on the record, and they wouldn't play it where these guys played it, and it changed the complexion of music at that time by featuring the guitar so heavy in it. You know, normally they would cut it off at the end, but they were letting it play all the way to the end of the song, which was kind of, you don't really have a guitar solo at the end. Freebird does, you know, but not a lot of songs have that. It just seemed to work. So the next song, they says, how about We Live for Love? Something completely different. And it worked. So.
And then in 1980, Crimes of Passion comes out. And oftentimes artists are worried about a sophomore slump. You guys have a sophomore surge. This thing goes 4 times platinum. And you co-write 4 of the songs, including Hell is for Children, which is an iconic song in the Benatar Giraldo catalog. It's just amazing.
They cry in the dark, so you can't see their tears. They hide in the light, so you can't see their fears. Forgive and forget all the while. Love and pain become one.
Yeah, what the reason that record kind of did what it did, I believe, is that the band had a chance to tour the whole year. And then when we went in there, we went in as a band. The first record was a band I put together. The record company says, you know, you could do anything you want. Pick the players you want to do this record. Mm-hmm. And I picked them. And but I changed a couple players. And then that record explains why that record, I think, did well, because we were playing a lot of those songs live and we developed as a band more so. Mm-hmm.
81. This is when you get your first co-producing credit. You were probably doing stuff behind the scenes and maybe not getting your name listed as producer, but with right. Precious Time, it's listed as Keith Olsen and Neil Giraldo. You co-write 5 of the 9 songs, and mm-hmm. Promises in the Dark is just stellar. And that video, like you said, once the video is in your head, you can't unsee a video sometimes for these songs.
Correct.
And that's one of them for me. But just fantastic work on that.
Well, thank you. That was a good, because it was a performance one, and we actually played every take we did. You know, we weren't plugged in. But we were actually playing it. You know, we're not faking it. We're playing it. You know, so that was kind of cool. I like doing that. That was good. Like I said, I'm not a big fan of you know, the video thing. Like we got rid of historical costumes after Shadows of the Night, because we just said, okay, this is we're over with this. We can't do this no more. So
no, that, right. So. I feel like the performance videos for you guys, like All Fired Up and things like that, that's when the band shined.
Yeah, I mean, because that's what you're doing. You know, the directors early on with videos were all trying to be film, you know, feature film directors, right? Yeah. So, you know, they weren't. This was their chance to do a demo where they got paid. You know, so if you think about that, it was a great opportunity for them, right?
Yeah, nice calling card.
Yeah, they can make the video, and the record company will pay them, and the budgets were outrageous. I mean, they were so high, I kept thinking, this is nuts. I don't understand why we're doing this, but anyway, it kind of works. So
yeah. Let me talk about a few iconic songs you worked on that weren't with Pat.
Okay.
Don't Fight It, Kenny Loggins, mm-hmm. Steve Perry, and Neil Giraldo on lead guitar.
So
How do you get involved in that song?
Kenny called me up and he said, I want you to play in a couple songs. There was another one called, I think, Imagination or something, which is a really good song. I really like that one more than Don't Fight It.
Okay.
And then, well, we got there and then I listened to it. And I says, well, I think you need to change some stuff to make this work. So, and I didn't even know Steve was going to be on the record. I had no idea. So I just cut it with Kenny playing and I just chopped it up a little bit. And that's why the beginning sounds the way it does. I was trying to set the tempo for everybody and just kind of do it. So,
that's how that works. There was no Steve Perry and Kenny Loggins singing in studio together when you were there.
No, just Kenny doing the lead vocal. Yeah.
All right. You produced John Waite's first solo album, Ignition. I love John Waite. I love that album.
Super talent.
Bottles in the alley, break and smash. Get into the car for one car crash. You tell me no more cool Mr. Wonderful. No more nice Mr. Clean. No more cool Mr. Ideal. It's driving me down. Driving me down to my knees.
I would have thought I know you've worked with other artists, but after I saw your name as producer on that album, I would have thought that I would have seen your name on more albums by other artists. Why did that not happen? Too busy with your thing.
Yeah, I did have opportunities. And the one I really regret is not working with Ozzy. I had a meeting with him in the morning. I remember it well, and his wife was there and we were talking, and they called my management right back as soon as the meeting was over and says, we love them. We're ready to go. And I didn't have enough time to do it because we were going on the road and I wanted to give it enough time. But even back then, and that was a long time ago, I don't remember what year it was, 83 or something. I can't remember, something like that. But I was, for a lot of young people, they don't really understand the record making process that happened when I started, cutting tape with scissors between your fingers, no loops, no digital stuff to manipulate. I mean, I was doing loops very strange way. I would be recording something, put it on a half inch tape, and then I would put it on a multi-track and I have to multi-track and multi-track more and more to create more of these. But loops, and I was going to do that with Ozzy too and make it just a little different, just give it a different spin, not just make it all the same kind of thing, but I worked with Beth Hart, Steve Forbert, Stephen Bishop, again, the touring thing really cut in and I didn't really have the time like I wanted to, or else I would have just like Brian Wilson. Not that I'm relating myself to Brian, but I would have done what he did, just stay home and make records. I would have done that. Without a doubt.
That's your happy place.
Love it. It's draining, but it's beautiful. The endorphin rush of getting a great take, of writing a great song is just fantastic. Just fantastic.
Now that brings me to an interesting point then. It's been over 20 years since Go was released, the last album you and Pat did. So if this is your happy place, are we ever going to see another Benatar Geraldo album?
Yeah, I think at some point we will. I have to just figure out how I can reinvent something, because the records that we made together, including the first one, like you said, there was so much a duo partnership in producing these records. I never thought about myself over the project. And the same with the Bourbon Company. I never think of myself over that. So I never had anybody in my camp saying, you know, you should really have his name on it. I mean, they changed the Crimes of Passion would give me producer credit finally. Yeah. So, you know, I didn't really, I wasn't good at self-promotion. I just didn't care, right? That kind of thing. So I have to figure out a way to reinvent. Because if you look through the catalog and you know our stuff, obviously, pretty well, you'll notice that after the first or second record, I dramatically changed things. Every song was kind of different. We Belong was different than Love is a Battlefield. Love is a Battlefield was different than the next one. And All Fired Up was a performance one. In other words, I didn't want to follow the eighth note guitar thing that everybody was doing, because I love a lot of rhythm. And in a lot of ways, it's the reason why I love Pete Townsend so much, because there's a lot of rhythm going on. Eminence Front, Baba O'Reilly. I mean, that was my inspiration. Have more rhythm. I play drums. I want to add stuff and make stuff crazy, you know, be different. So if I can find a way to reinvent this thing, I probably will do it.
But there's songs that have been written and just not recorded. You've got a back catalog of songs ready.
Oh yeah. I got a ton. And also, Myron, who I call Tyrone, drummer Myron, him and I are working on a project together too. Just him and I, sort of like a Black Keys. I guess I could say that, because it's just the two of us, you know, playing all the instruments and making all that racket and writing all kinds of really super cool songs. Yeah. So this is going to be pretty interesting. Yeah.
I'm in Woodland Hills, California. That's where I live. I can, I'm about five blocks from where I can walk over and say hello to Myron. And you know what I'm talking about.
I know what you're talking about. That's great. Yeah, he's great. We're having a great time. It's just phenomenal.
Just such a fun drummer to watch too. Just amazing.
Yeah.
You played the guitar solo on Jesse's Girl for Rick Springfield.
I co-produced that too. They finally gave me credit on that one too. That was supposed to be, it was supposed to happen too. And they never did. A record came out. This is just part of my life. It's funny like that, but yeah. Guitar and bass. Did all the guitars, played bass on it.
Great stuff.
That was fun. Yeah, that was fun. Thank you.
Let me throw this out too, so people know where to find you as far as music goes, BenatarGeraldo.com, and on Instagram, @BenatarGeraldo.
Yeah. You could also go to Neil Geraldo Official on Instagram, Neil Geraldo Official. And you can also go to, I think it's Official Neil Geraldo on Facebook. And there's a different Facebook page, because I want to dedicate it more towards the profession of music. I don't like doing things personal on Facebook pages. Yeah. I don't like doing that. I have a lot of things to talk about. And I do on that page, even though I've been a little off it. Not so much lately. Just because I've been too busy trying to stay in my lane of making music and try to have a clear thought that, you know, social media is great, a great marketing tool. And it's a great thing to give to your fans and your, you know, your people out there, but man, it's time consuming. It's just,
it's a lot. I want to let people know that some later Pat Benatar albums, Gravity's Rainbow and In Amorata, are just two fantastic albums. If you've never heard those, seek them out. Just great tunes. Every Time I Fall Back from Gravity's Rainbow is so excellent. Yeah. And, you know, because I think sometimes people get caught up in like the sweet spot of the Benatar catalog, and they're not going out, you know, further to these last few albums. I really want people to.
Oh, that's nice. Yeah, there's some choice cuts on there. There's some great stuff on there. Some different avenues we took for, sonically. In fact, one on Inamorata, I wanted to make it very acoustic, and I wasn't really playing electric guitar. I played an acoustic guitar through a Leslie DI, and then Allison Cornell, who is a phenomenal viola player, violin, who she just recently passed away, which was really hard to hear. She was a spectacular talent. She played all the viola and things on that record. We like that one a lot.
How am I supposed to make it through another day? What am I supposed to do now that you've gone away? Is there anything encouraging you can say to me? Did you really think my heart was made of stone? Maybe you never gave it any thought at all. How nice to go through life oblivious and free.
That one and Gravity's Rainbow is kind of fun, because if any guitar player wants to try to learn the songs, they're not in A440, they're like 442 with, you know, 430, because I just tuned by ear. I never used the tuner, so I would go in there and I would just tune, and I'd say, okay, let's go, and a bass player would tune to me, and we just did the songs. That's it. So
And Neil, what are you in as you get older, you become veteran artists, I guess that's what I'm going to say. Yep. How do you guys stay so youthful and get out there and still be able to do it at such a high level? It doesn't seem like you're slowing down on stage. Everything just seems as good as it ever was. What are you guys doing personally to keep yourselves healthy and going?
Well, first of all, you know, there's another thing I wish people would have done early on. And if fans and people look at bands and they're looking at them and they see them and they're maybe they are doing drugs, maybe they are drinking, maybe they're doing all that, or maybe they're not really doing that, but given the impression they are. Yeah. So all those fans and people want to emulate that. But the key is, you know, be like Sting. Be like Springsteen. You know, you got to take care of your body. You got to take care of your health. It's really, really important. It's not easy. I have a very restrictive diet that I have to stay on. And, you know, it's really hard on the road. But it's those are the prices you have to pay in order to do what you do. Listen, if you're not doing drugs and you're not over drinking and doing this, in order to be a songwriter or a musician, I believe you have to have a clear head.
Yeah,
you got to get sleep and you got to have a clear head. The people that maybe, you know, expose themselves maybe by drinking too much or doing some drugs too much or whatever it is like that, you think you're playing better. Mm-hmm. You think you're right, but you're really not better.
Not.
It's just that's the thing. So Patricia and I both and the band, we really pay attention to the health and fitness. You know, I had a little thing called Spider Sports Camp. Yeah, all this stuff is going to be in the book. There's even more. Yeah, I can tell you. I can speak to you for like 3 hours, and you won't even touch one chapter. But I had a thing called Spider Sports Camp, and what I do is I'd work out in the morning, and I'd run after I worked out. I'd have lunch, and before the gig, I would jump rope to the opening band on stage.
Wow!
And then I do the show, and I used to do that all the time. It's called Spider Sports Camp, and anybody that want to join me, if you're walking into the venue and you see me doing it, you want to do it, come along. You
know? And then after the show,
I don't do
collapse.
That no more. I collapse after the show. I'm like, gone. Yeah, gone. I don't do that anymore. But you know, just stuff. You know, giving it for guitar players if they're listening to this is that I used to use very heavy strings. 12s for an E up to 60, 59. Sometimes I go 13s and tune the E flat on 13s. And what happens is because I have my hands are very strong and I grip really, really hard. It's all part of the tone and the way I attack the instrument. But over time, that causes arthritis in your paws. So it's not it's not something I recommend for people, because when you get in the late 60s, like me, I'm going to be 69. You could tell you've done some damage to those knuckles, no question.
And do you pick up the guitar every day, Neil?
I try to every day. I play piano every day.
Okay.
I write primarily on piano.
Okay.
Because the beauty of, and the thing I love to do the most is that if I can write a song on piano, and it's fun to sing and it's correct and it feels really good, as soon as I pick up the guitar instrument, I can all of a sudden shape it to any way I want at that point. Because then, in other words, if I did it opposite that, I'd sit down trying to write and on acoustic guitar, which mostly is what I'm doing. And then all of a sudden I start playing Lightning Hopkins songs. And I'm playing Muddy Waters. And then I'm just screwing around playing blues and I'm not trying to write a song anymore. So that just, I can't do it any other way, you know?
And you sit down behind the piano in concert too.
Yes. Yeah. And see, when I joined the Rick Derringer band prior to meeting Patricia and putting our thing together, I played more piano than guitar with them. And that was 1977, 78. I was on a record called Guitars and Women.
I'm just a you hardly ever touch me, and you're almost never real. I'm a hopeless romantic. I'm living in a world of greed. Just a
Yeah,
I don't know if you knew that, and I did that, and there are some songs that are out now that I play piano on that weren't on the particular record, but because I used to play piano all the time, I loved all that. I loved Count Basie, Duke Ellington, you know, everybody, you know, all the greats, right? So, but here I am now. You know?
Yeah. Okay, Neil, this is going to be the hardest part of the interview for me.
Okay.
And I'm going to tell you why. So I collect autographed albums when sometimes guests are on the show in person and I get them to sign stuff. And sometimes I, you know, wait after the show as a fan and get stuff signed. Pete Townsend, Ray Davies, Chrissy Hynde, Todd Rundgren, you name it. Mm-hmm. I got them.
Yep.
They're signed and they're hanging on the wall.
Yep.
So. And the reason I'm going to tell you this is because I've told my listeners this story many times, and I just want to get some closure on it. It was sure. Thursday, September 13th, 2012. Pat Benatar and Neil Giraldo played live at the Canyon Club in Agoura Hills, California.
Yes. After
the show, I'm waiting for an autograph. And I'm the only person waiting, Neil. It's just me. Unassuming. Mm-hmm. I'm not aggressive. I'm just standing there with my Crimes of Passion album. So Pat comes out first. and she's with another woman, I assume a handler. And I ask Pat for an autograph, and Pat says, "No problem. Just let me get settled in the car." SUV was there. So I'm like, okay, great. So I'm assuming Pat's going to get settled in the car, roll the window down and call me over. But that does not happen. And I'm like, you know, so, you know, I'm still waiting. And then you come out. And I said, and I remember, it's terrible, Neil. I'm going to have to quote you. But I said, "Neil, could I get a signature?" And you said, "Aw, buddy, I can't do that." And then you got in the car.
Correct.
And then you drove away. And I know that you guys love your fans. Mm-hmm. And I just, I don't, what happened? What was going on that night, you think?
Well, you know, usually we do sign stuff.
Yeah.
I don't know what could have happened, but once Patricia wasn't going to sign something for whatever reason it is, I can't, and I'm not throwing anybody under the bus.
I understand.
I can't do it.
I get it.
That would make her feel bad like that. We've sat and signed records for so many people. The Canyon Club is a local gig. It could have been because we have followers. After we leave a place like that, we probably needed to get out of there. I'm going to say that may be it. I'm not sure.
Are you saying people that would follow you to your house?
Correct.
All right.
Correct.
All right.
Correct. Correct. And depending on road managers, again, I'm not throwing somebody out of under the bus, but I'm thinking I know who the road manager was at the time, and I'm not going to mention names on who this person was. Okay. All I know is that when I went back on the road, when they found out he wasn't the road manager, they go, "Thank God."
All right.
Right. So, okay. Well, we'll sign something for you anytime you want.
Well, Neil, look, I've told this story
maybe,
on the show.
I don't know. Maybe you're not a nice guy. Maybe that was it. Man, this guy looks like a bad guy. Maybe.
No, look, Neil, I've told this story before, and I feel like it would be disingenuous if I didn't ask you personally what was going on. But you've given me closure in the fact that if Pat doesn't sign, you can't sign. That makes her look bad.
Correct.
And it is a home. I know you guys live close to the Canyon Club. And so, yeah, if there's weirdos that are going to follow you after the show to your house, I totally understand. I totally get it.
It's usually like that, especially like a local gig like that. Yeah, we got to get out.
You want to get out of
there. You just got to get out.
I get it.
Because you can't wait. As soon as you wait, somebody else sees something.
Yep.
The other thing is, too, we have a policy, too, like most people. You can't just sign one. If you sign one and somebody else, you have to sign them too.
Yeah.
And then if somebody sees you signing that, all of a sudden more, they come, they're parked in their cars or whatever, they come out.
All right.
We would never hurt anybody, but not said, who cares? We don't care about that.
All right.
I'm not going to do that on purpose.
I hope this didn't ruin the interview for you by me telling you that story.
No, but they probably said this was a really bad guy out there. That was the reason we didn't.
fantastic.
Now
I have that. All right, Neil, look, everybody, Three Chord Bourbon, that's chord.com.
Right.
Head over there.
Yes.
See what they're doing. It's amazing stuff. I mean, I got to be honest with you. And again, I've tried so many of these celebrity spirits, if that's what we're going to call it. And these guys are doing good work. It's quality. And Neil is all in on this. He's the real deal.
Totally.
You can just tell from the website. You can tell that these people care about the product at hand. Now, Neil,
we have a backstage series too, which is phenomenal. I think
we just got
the Allman Brothers to come in.
Look
yeah, there you go. Hailstorm.
Hailstorm.
Yeah. Cause that's a great opportunity for young bands because they don't have to do anything other than do a taste profile.
Yeah.
And they just use our label and it's a great to get to their fans. And it's a, you know,
It's fantastic.
Something like
and look, if you're a fan of a band like Hailstorm or Allman Brothers, it's a very cool collectible too. The bottle, it's super fun.
Correct. It's super cool. It's their own design. They did it on top of our logo like that. And listen, you don't even have to drink it. It just looks. It's a great looking bottle. You can keep it on your
whatever, on the shelf,
the kitchen.
It's reasonably priced. It's not cheap. But it's not super expensive. There are different varying levels on the website, but it's reasonable and it's good. Neil, are there tour dates in 2024 coming up?
Yeah, they're coming out. I think that it's going to be, oh, I don't know. I'm not exactly sure. July, maybe. All right. July through August. There's something in June, a couple nonprofit things.
Nice.
Yeah, there's some stuff. There's some stuff coming. I think we're doing a Patsy Cline tribute in Nashville coming up soon. Just Patricia and I doing a song. Yeah, there's stuff. Yeah, we're good. We're making some noise.
You're making some noise. All right.
Yeah, we're making noise.
Congrats to finally getting into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Congrats on all the success with Three Chord Bourbon. Continued success with music and the book. And with that, my last question. Of all the songs in your career, which one do you want to choose for me to use as our playout song today?
Well, here's how this goes. songs are like children. You can't just pick one favorite.
I know.
It really puts you in a bad place.
It's rough.
It is rough. I would say, because you highlighted Hell's for Children. I would say Hell's for Children, and the reason being, because it's its own feature film. And what I mean by that, it starts very somber and it's sad and it's heartfelt. I can't even recite those words in a verse, be a good little boy and you'll get a new toy. Tell grandma you fell off the swing. I mean, that is some powerful stuff. And that was Patricia, Roger, and myself. And collectively, we really did it. So you're somber, it's somber. And then it gets you angry. And then when it changes the up-tempo, it is really, really angry. And you're just really pissed that somebody would hurt a child and do this. And it just ends and you think about it and it's just horrible because you know it's never going to end. There's still going to be people that do that. So it has a whole long thing of emotions. And I put it on the end of side one because I wanted side one to end to really make you think about, oh my God, you know. And then flip it over and start again. So
well, that's your producers. That's your producers had there putting it at the end of side one. Smart move. Yep. And again, people weren't writing songs like that, lyrics like that about subjects like that way back when. I mean, that's about 20 years before Janie's Got a Gun almost. So
It was a long time. A long time ago. That is because those issues were they're there always and they get kicked under the rug and they get hidden and it's a shame. You know, we do anything we can for children. I mean, it's just the bullying, man, it's just got to stop. I mean, this is just horrible what people do.
Yeah. And it's social horrible. Media doesn't help. So no, with that, everybody head over to 3chordbourbon.com, BenatarGeraldo.com. Thank you, Neil. And everyone, please enjoy Hell is for Children. Thank you, Neil.
Thank you. I appreciate you. Thank you.
Appreciate you too. See you soon.
All right. See you soon. I'll sign your record when I see you.
I know you will.
Just don't knock on my door. If I see you at my front door, no way.
No way. No way. I'll never do it.
But I'll tell you what, keep it in your car because you never know you'll see me at a market.
So. True.
I do all the shopping, so you might see me at a market.
Okay, I will. I'll put it in the car.
I owe you one.
Bye-bye.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Such a mess. dying fast.